Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Mallory Mercer, Director of Advocacy and Community Engagement for the STAR Coalition. On this podcast series, we're going to shed light on some of the most stigmatized and misunderstood areas of the mental health industry. Our hope is that through this podcast, we can bring transparency and light to a system that is so heavily scrutinized. We aim to share vital information about a multitude of mental health topics while spreading the message that research equals hope. Today, we're sitting down with Omar Moriera. Omar has been working in the clinical research space for 5 years, where he's held multiple positions as a clinical writer, recruitment specialist, marketing specialist, and now as the business development manager at Siegel Trials. Encompassed throughout his work experience are 8+ years of upholding clinical psychiatry care, pharmaceutical research practices, and leadership roles. Within his background, he currently possesses 2 years of managerial experience, 2 years of working in the fields of administration, marketing, and social media strategizing, 3 years as a clinical writer, and 2 years as a counselor providing psychotherapy. Throughout his close to a decade-long experience, he has been able to develop insightful, strategic, courteous, hardworking, and communicative characteristics which have assisted in being able to respond to a wide spectrum of needs constituted of patients, volunteers, and organizations. He is a compassionate and ambitious bilingual team leader, able to uphold professionalism and courteous demeanor in fast-paced environments, all while delivering excellent services to various clients, patients, or pharmaceutical or biotech partners. We're so excited that Omar chose to join us today on this episode. When we first began planning this podcast, you knew exactly what you wanted to talk about. Tell me why you feel that this topic is so important to candidly discuss, Omar.
So I think this topic is very important to discuss just because, especially nowadays, we're moving more towards a time where mental health is being talked about more often and people are feeling, that they can communicate these different topics more out loud. And so I think it's very beautiful. And I think this is something that we should continue doing.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful time for mental health and the openness of diagnoses. So since we started to grasp the importance of vulnerability with your diagnoses in order to reduce the stigma, I want to talk a little bit about that today. Can you talk about the pros and cons of opening up with your diagnoses?
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of pros and cons to opening up about, one's mental health diagnosis. Of course, the reason that we mentioned some of the cons is because there are potential negative consequences that can occur. And the reason that we mentioned that is just so the individual can be as best prepared as possible in any worst case situation. Now, some of the pros, of course, include with coming out and talking about mental health include furthering your awareness of the mental health condition, helping you increase empathy towards other individuals or maybe individuals that are going through a similar situation. Strengthening one's compassion towards others, advancing the knowledge base of these mental health disorders or of these mental health conditions. Of course, personal growth, social connection, empowerment, and being able to live honestly and truthfully to oneself. Now, those are a lot of the pros that currently, of course, are, happen. Some of the potential negative effects, of course, include receiving stigma from family and friends. And really this depends on what kind of support network is around you or what kind of experience is around you. Facing insensitivity from others, exclusions from gatherings, so alienation, and of course, hurtful advice and unhelpful advice.
So you've been in this industry a long time, Omar, and I want to know from your perspective, whether it be a client, a coworker, a friend, or a family member, how do you respond in an empathetic way when someone discloses that to you?
Yeah, so being able to respond in an empathetic way is definitely, it's easy, but it can be tricky because, everybody's different, especially with what they want to share. I have found that some of the best ways to come up with that open-ended empathetic response is to ask open-ended questions. So with closed-ended questions, a lot of the times you're really restricted to just a yes or no response, right? With an open-ended question, the individual is allowed to really illustrate how this experience, this emotion, or this thought is affecting them. So some of the questions that you can ask are, you know, something simple like, you know, how does this make you feel? Or what does this, how does this thought make you feel? You could also just ask, you know, what has been running through your mind lately, or what have you been thinking about? Sometimes you can go even deeper than that, and you can ask some of my personal favorite open-ended questions, which are scaling questions. So for example, you can ask, you know, from a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being amazing, how do you feel, or how does that look for you? How does that look to you? Let's say they give you a response and say they feel like a 4 or a 3, right? You can follow that up and ask them, you know, what does that look like to you? What does this 4 look like to you, to better get an illustration of what the individual is going through? If you want to go even further beyond that, you could even ask them, okay, so you say you're at a 4. Well, how do you think you can get to a 5 or a 6? See, these open-ended questions just add color to what the individual is experiencing, to what they're thinking, to what they're, how they're behaving, or to their emotions. So I think those are one of the best ways that one can really get to know what the other person is going through.
Absolutely. And it doesn't fit anyone to a mold. It really gives them the freedom to describe their own experience, and it does not put it in a box. So I think that's wonderful advice, Omar. As someone in the research field, what is something that you struggle with when individuals are being very open and honest with you about a difficult situation that they're facing?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, as I was coming up as a clinician and learning, one of the harder things was when a patient, a client, or a volunteer, when they start to open up with you, these experiences that they share can get kind of graphic, especially in their detail. So as a first year clinician, for example, you know, hearing that might set you back, or that might, you know, make you feel a certain type of way because maybe it hits home, hits close to home. So those are all reactions, not only facial, but also cognitive reactions that one has to be aware of. And remember that this is about the patient, volunteer, client that's taking the time to explain it to them. It has nothing to do with, you know, you at this time, or at the moment. It could affect you, but it's about them. I think the second part to that is, I think a lot of times clinicians, or just really anyone that sees a patient, they try to build rapport, right? Which is great. I think that's absolutely needed, especially during the beginning. And really building rapport just follows on throughout all of the sessions that you're with a client, a volunteer, a patient. However, you have to remember that as they are expressing themselves, it really is about them. So yes, you know, it's important to be empathetic, but you don't want to make it about you. So yeah, let's say you do relate to something that someone is saying, you don't want to make it about you. You might want to build rapport and let them know that, oh, okay, you know, I had a similar experience, or I had a similar time, but always remember that you can't get too deep into it. Because ultimately it's a client, volunteer, patient's time. You know, you don't want to take away from their time.
Absolutely. And I bet in the beginning that was hard to do. So what are some practices that you did to ensure that you maintained that focus on the individual?
Yeah. So definitely having awareness and going through the experience is something that helped out a lot. A couple of different things, I guess. You know, of course, prepping beforehand, you know, making sure that, you know, this is the time for them to come in and speak on what they're experiencing. Just being more aware of it, having it present in your mind. Also, you know, being able to read some of the nonverbal cues that the individual is giving off, right? So, you know, maybe the way they're sitting, or maybe they're closed off. So keeping an eye on that, and also seeing their reaction to when you do, you know, share a little bit more about yourself. There's nothing wrong with you know, empathizing or sharing a similar experience that someone is having. You just have to be careful as to how much you want to approach it. And everybody's different. Some people that are in front of you, they may want to hear that, oh yes, you had that similar experience, tell me more, because that's the type of rapport skills that they need to build it. While other patients, clients, or volunteers, they might be a little bit more reserved, where yes, they want to hear that they're not alone, but they also want to be reminded that this is about them. So you could definitely do a little bit of trial and error. You know, you should put your feet in the water a little bit to see how they respond. I guess a good rule of thumb is, if you feel as if you're talking more or sharing more than the patient or the client or the volunteer, that's a very good sign to maybe just back off a little bit.
Absolutely. And it is so individualized with your approach. On the topic of awareness, I want to talk about research a little bit. Have you found that most individuals are aware of their treatment options?
That's very funny that you say that, because I don't think that a lot of just people in general are aware of their treatment options. I mean, just when you look at some of the data, I mean, close to 50% of adults in the United States are going to experience some kind of mental health condition in their lifetime. And I believe suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States as well. And 30 to 80% of clients, people just in the United States, don't even seek treatment. Those that do seek treatment, a lot of the time, they don't respond to their initial, you know, let's just call it psychiatric medication, because that's typically the first treatment that they seek. So I do not think that they are aware of all the vast opportunities that there are. I think typically when one thinks of a treatment, their mind immediately goes to psychiatric medication. Of course, there's also holistic medications, which are more natural. There's more psychotherapy treatment. But one that I have not seen is clinical research as a potential care option. And I think this is something new, and I think it's starting to gain momentum as more individuals are aware of what research as a whole can bring to the individual.
Absolutely. So let's say someone listening is interested in clinical trials as a care option. How can they learn more about that before they officially sign up?
Yeah. So there, of course, you should always do a little bit of research. And there's a couple of different ways that they can know about any potential clinical research opportunities. I think the first or most immediate one is asking your physician or your primary care physician, or maybe even possibly even a pharmacist. They'll probably be able to direct you, since they know in terms of a medical condition standpoint. The second is, of course, you know, you can do your research through Google, simply Googling, you know, clinical research sites near me, or just clinical studies near me, depending on the indication that that one is experiencing. You could also, if you do find a specific site, you can also go on their website. So typically, for example, on our Segal Trials website, there's an about section, and then there's an FAQ section, as well as just an entire section dedicated to explaining just what research is and just the importance of research, and explaining, you know, what you can typically expect generally from your clinical research experience. And I think the final way that one can, I guess, inform themselves on this is there's a lot of different, typically they're government websites that indicate clinical trials as a whole. So for example, clinicaltrials.gov has a slew of studies available per the indication, per height, per medical condition. So I think those are all really great options that one can use.
Absolutely. And we will have all of those cited in our source material today for anyone to look at if they're interested. I want to ask Omar, you have friends and family that know that you're in this field. So if one of your friends or close family members asked you about clinical research, how would you transparently explain to them this process and the pros and the cons that are involved?
Yeah, that's a great question. So yeah, working in clinical research for the time that I have, over 5 years now, I've definitely had a lot of friends and even family members asking about different studies. And I'm a huge proponent that I think everyone, if possible, should just try and participate in a clinical study just to get that experience and just see how, you know, what kind of effect it has. I think some of the best ways that you can inform them is a lot of the times there's, for example, and I guess I'll explain it from my case. So at Segal, we typically have these brochures that explain everything about clinical research. You know, a lot of the pros, what you can expect depending on the study, just details of the experience, you know, who you will be interacting with. So I typically give, along with me explaining to them verbally everything, I typically give them that brochure. So let's say someone does want to do a study, and let's say that they qualify for a clinical trial. So once you qualify for a clinical trial, it's not that you get in and you're on the medication or whatever and you're done. No. So before you do anything, they give you what's called an informed consent, which is just an ICF. It's just a consent form that basically explains in detail as much as possible of the clinical trial. So typically how it goes is that the individual, the volunteer, will receive this consent form before meeting with a doctor, before meeting with any clinician, and they'll get a chance to read it on their own, at their own pace, to really comprehend and digest there. After that, you are then going to be sitting in a room with typically the physician, the doctor, and also one of the clinicians as well. And they will, again, go through the ICF, the consent form packet, with you in detail. And of course, that's the time where you ask any questions that you may need to ask. And at the end of it all, on the consent form, and you know, the clinicians will tell you this, this of clinical research is, of course, volunteer, you know, from a volunteer perspective. So at any time, if the individual doesn't want to proceed in the study, they 100% have that right to volunteer. They can come out. And so that when I tell people that, that kind of gives them like a breath of fresh air, because even though you are going to be with doctors and, you know, nurses and clinicians all around you, it's still nice to know that, hey, at the end of the day, I have my, you know, safety is the number one concern and I have the final say.
So with your many years of experience, when someone comes to you and is weary of clinical research, as so many are, what is the biggest thing that makes you believe and trust in this process of clinical research?
So there's a couple of different things. So first, typically the studies are a certain length, right? And within, it could be months, it could be year, it could be years, but whatever the length, there's multiple study visits. And I mentioned those multiple study visits because they're touch points for the patients. So once a week, sometimes multiple times throughout the week, you're going to be surrounded by a clinical staff, nurses and doctors that are going to be focused on your safety, that are going to be focused on how you're doing and how you're feeling, right? So that's very good right off the bat. There's also an incredible amount of support. There's a lot of things that, there's a lot of medical assistance that you can get in a clinical trial that isn't, that you would have to typically pay for. So for example, when you're in a clinical study, they have to make sure your blood pressure is good, depending on the trial. Your cholesterol is good. Your BMI is appropriate. Your medications won't conflict with each other. So you're basically going to have this physician oversight that you won't get, you know, unless you're ready to dish out an X amount of money when you go to your primary care physician. So you get a lot of the things that you get at your PCP in a clinical trial. That's the second thing. The third mark is, I think, in terms of the follow-up and support. So even once a study is over, there are still follow-up visits well after you are done taking whatever treatment is that they're providing. And many times it goes 3-6 months, sometimes even a year of follow-up, just to make sure that the individual is doing well and that their safety is, of course, you know, not being harmed. And I think the last option, the last mark is, or the last factor is just the amount of community resources that you are able to be aware of and participate in when you're in a clinical trial. Whether it's advocacy, whether it's local community, whether it's national community resources, there are just tons and tons and tons of community resources that are presented to you during your clinical trial experience.
Yeah, overall, throughout this experience, I have just learned that doing research is some of the best care people have ever received. And it's wonderful to hear about that and change the narrative that so many of us have. So before we go, Omar, tell me some of your final thoughts on your belief that it is so important to be open with your diagnosis and as well as being open with treatment options.
I think it's extremely important that people are open about their mental health and able to talk about their mental health, because it is hard and it is difficult and not everybody is going to have the same experience. That's why we mentioned both the pros and the cons, right? However, overall, it has a huge benefit, and you being able to talk about mental health is going to help the person next to you or the person listening or the person watching you that doesn't want to talk about it. It's going to give them courage. You know, it's going to give them that just push to be able to talk about that. And then it's a cascading effect from there, right? One person, and then it turns to 3, then 9, then 12, and so forth and so on. And in terms of research, I mean, really in order to get the best data for the best clinical care options, we need individuals to be able to have that awareness over their mental health condition or over, of course, I'm speaking just in psychiatry, but this, of course, expands to other diseases. But in pediatric research, you know, you really need individuals to be that are open to talking about their mental health, that are open to, you know, that that are aware of their experiences, their behaviors, their symptoms, because ultimately, when you come in and you participate in a clinical trial, that's just going to give stronger data and it's going to just give more efficacious research. And that's going to translate into these treatment options that are not only going to help you, the individual, but also individuals and, you know, future generations.
Absolutely. People are in trials now because they're making a difference for the future. And that's a resounding response that we hear from previous participants and participants who would like to sign up again for research trials. Yeah. So thank you so much, Omar, for coming on today. We so enjoy working with you and Siegel Trials. If any of our listeners have any questions, you can email me at Mallory@thestar. And if you have any specific questions for Omar, please do a subject line, ask Omar, and we will get those questions to him. If you guys need any information on source material, that will be linked in this podcast follow-up. Thank you, and join us again next time on the Star Coalition podcast.
Thank you.